With desolation is the land made desolate, because there are none who thinketh in their heart. Somewhere along the path of life, of every human being, there comes a dread moment when we suddenly see ourselves for what we really are, minus all the sham, the surface, and the show. We stand face to face with truth, minus the deception of our own self-seeking and selfishness. We see ourselves clearly outlined in the aura of God's grace as it tears away all the foolish self-deception and shows a man for what he really is. Selfish, deceitful, full of excuses, dishonest even to himself, and full of faults and failings. Now, to some few people, it may come in the green and viral freshness of youth, when failures still are only theory, and cocksureness still the ardor of the day. Blessed are they if they can then and there see the truth for what it is, follow it faithfully on down through all the subsequent years. To another, some, the moment is delayed until remaining years are few, until they are fast fading and the will is battered and torn by life's long struggles and hardships. But to them, truth remains obscure. Immersed over the long years in the deception and the excuses of the world, the flesh, and the devil, only a miracle of providence and God's grace can pierce the hardened shell. However, to most of us, this moment comes at a time when many of life's battles and years have passed, but at a time when there are still remaining sufficient years and sufficient vigor and initiative to seek truth and to pursue it in order to make it the motive of our living and the motive of our struggles and the security of our declining years. This moment may be occasioned by the death of a loved one or the loss of worldly goods, or it may be directly occasioned by the grace of God speaking to the depth of a lonely soul. To most alcoholics, it comes at that instant when we face that inevitable choice: death, insanity, or absolute sobriety. Sometimes, and to some of us, it comes with a blinding flash that seems to tear away the very foundations of life. An alcoholic or non-alcoholic, layman or professional, young or old, there arises from the very innermost sanctuary of the soul and the heart the cry, "My God, what a mess I have made of things. How pitiful the good done. How sparing my help to others. How innumerable my mistakes. The wrong. How all-pervading my self-seeking. How dishonest my every motive. How seamy the finished but now battered product." This moment may last for an hour, a day, a month, a year, or for years. But whenever, wherever, or however it comes, it is a fearful moment, because upon that moment may depend, and upon the decisions of that moment could depend, our whole life and our whole eternity. And after that has happened to us, one can never be the same again. For it is then that we see fully and clearly, without rhyme or excuse, what we are, what we have made of ourselves, what we have done with it. For once we know things for what they really are. And at that time, life's greatest decision must be made. And then it is that it seems that an angel has us by the hand and the devil has us by the foot. And having caught perhaps only for a flashing moment a vision of our own selves as we really are in the white light of truth, having seen the abyss that separates ourselves from the one we really thought we might have been, and having at the same time recognized our complete helplessness, we can do one of three things. First, we may rush back in confusion to the old surface view of things, to the thousands of half-remedies to explain away the stubborn reality which we saw for the first time. In other words, we can excuse ourselves and return to our old ways of living. This is the decision of the vain man. Secondly, the shock may be so great, the failure so undeniably real, the disillusionment so crushing that we despair, and in one way or other, we seek to destroy ourselves, either factually or by the bottle. That is the decision of the proud man. Third is the way of the prodigal son, who dropped on his knees and cried, "Father, I have sinned." And with an echo, "I am powerless. My life is unmanageable." And perhaps for the first time in our lives, we really pray and begin to meditate. This is the decision of the humble man. And as we pray and meditate day by day, we more and more realize how in previous years our lives were shot through with excuse making and with a systematic and persistent dishonesty that amazes even ourselves. Now, why is this? Why had we picked up such a habit of excuse making? Well, the habit of making excuses is as old as the human race. It had its beginnings with Adam and Eve. Remember the story? Let's take a look at what happened. According to the scriptures, Adam and Eve were created and placed in the Garden of Eden to be happy. However, the Lord told Adam and Eve, "You can have all things, but you cannot eat of a certain tree in the middle of the garden." And he said, "The day you eat it, you'll die." And along came the serpent. And there he saw Eve. And he asked Eve, "How come? Why don't you eat the fruit of that tree there?" He says, "We can't." The serpent says, "Well, why can't you?" He says, "The Lord said we couldn't." And the serpent says, "Oh, look at it. Nice little apple. Nice red apple." And then Eve started to give in. She started to hesitate. She looked at the apple. She saw that it was good to eat. And then she suddenly said, "But God said that on the day we eat it, we'll die." And the serpent says, "You won't die. God knows that when you eat the fruit, you'll become like unto him. That's the reason he don't want you to eat it." That clinched the argument. And Eve ate the apple. Eve doubted God, believed the serpent, she ate the fruit. But immediately she realized that she had done wrong. Oh, conscience, start working. But she in turn offered it to Adam. Misery loves company, you know. And she said, "Adam, come here." He said, "Look, I got a nice big apple. And it's good, look, I took a bite." Well, as so many husbands have done down through the ages, in order to placate his wife, Adam ate the apple. And then they heard the voice of the Lord. And they began to be afraid. Why? because they were seeking to escape responsibility for their actions. They fled this voice of God. And then in order to justify himself, in order to escape from responsibility, and to minimize his own guilt, and to salve his own conscience, when God asked Adam, "Why did you eat the fruit?" he answered with the first excuse that we know was used in the human race, "She tempted me." And then the Lord turned to Eve. And again we have excuse number two. "The serpent deceived me. I couldn't help it." To escape responsibility, to minimize her own guilt, to salve her own conscience, she excused herself. And then a little later in Adam and Eve's own family, we have the example of Cain and Abel. They were the sons of Adam. Cain got mad one day, and he killed Abel. And then the Lord came and said, "Cain, where is your brother Abel?" And we have excuse number three. "Am I my brother's keeper? I don't know where he is." He knew where he was, but he wanted to excuse himself. And centuries later, we have the parable that was given to us when the Lord gave a supper, invited many guests, you know, and they all immediately began to make excuse. The first said, "I bought a farm, and I must go see it." Now, can you imagine a guy buying a farm before he saw it? But it was a good excuse. Another fella said, "I have bought 5 yoke of oxen, and I've got to go try them." Can you imagine a guy buying oxen without knowing what they were? The next guy had a little bit of honesty. He said, "I married a wife and I can't go." But in all of these instances, they excused themselves to justify what they had done wrong, to escape responsibility, to minimize their guilt, and to salve their conscience. Now, what would the alternative have been? The humble admission, "I did wrong, Lord, I'm sorry." Adam would have only had to say, "Yes, Lord, I ate the fruit. I know, I realize I've done wrong, I'm sorry. I'll do better in the future." Eve, Cain, the ones who excused themselves from the supper, all that was necessary was simply an honest admission and an humble willingness to avoid it in the future. Whereas the person who makes excuses is like the little child whom we hear say, "Mommy, I couldn't help it. I couldn't help it." Instead of, "I'm sorry, Mommy, I won't do it again." And so the alcoholic, when he comes along, he's a past master at making excuses. How could we justify our existence if we hadn't been? We had to manufacture them by the carload. When we run out, we made more of them. Now, why is this? Well, I think there's two reasons for it in the alcoholic. Not that all people don't make excuses. All people do. But the alcoholic, he's the past master at it. First of all, and this is only my own opinion, I believe all alcoholics have a sort of over-sincerity to their personality. They're perfectionistic. They're sensitive. So they really are trying to do a little better than they even have to do. And along with that, they have a fear, an indefinable fear in their personality. So most alcoholics, in order to justify their actions because of their fear, the abnormal fear comes into play. And having done something or failed to accomplish what they tried to do, the fear causes them to escape. However, that's merely an opinion of my own. Now, what is an excuse? Well, I'm going to give you my definition. It's the only one I can give you. And an excuse, to my mind, is an attempt to find a reason where there ain't any. In other words, to avoid facing the whole truth. This same rationalization and excuse making we find operating in a group of alcoholics when you hear them say, now, just what is an alcoholic? Looking for an out. Looking for someone to say, now, this is a part of alcoholism. I haven't got that, so I must not be an alcoholic. That will justify my next drink. Now, since this habit of excuse making is such a basic human fault and such a very important part of the personality of all alcoholics, let's endeavor to analyze some excuses and to try to point out their utter fallacy. Now, of course, I could be here for days giving some of the excuses that we hear in AA. So we'll just take a few of the most important ones that we hear not only in AA, but in everyday living. And excuse number one is, well, everybody else does it. This is one of the most common use. Everybody else does it, so I don't feel so bad. But that doesn't change the law, does it? But since everybody does it, well, I'm not by myself, so I justify my actions, I salve my conscience, I feel better. For a while, I've made an excuse. Then another one is, well, they all say so. Who are they? Have you ever met they? But it does salve our conscience, doesn't it? If we can say, well, somebody else did it. They say so. Then another one we hear every once in a while is, well, men of distinction do it. VIP, you know. You know what the end of VIP is? RIP. You know, talking about men of distinction. There used to be an ad in the Slick magazine of a certain liquor. And it said that men of distinction changed to this liquor, you know. Well, there used to have a fellow there posing for that ad. He was a very handsome guy, gray-haired. But all of a sudden, he didn't pose anymore. I met him in a sanitarium. I don't know whether he changed or not. Then another excuse you hear once and again is, well, my mother told me so. Poor mom, she's gone now. Blame her for everything. Something my mother did when I was a child, you know. Mommy, I can't help it. Another excuse is, well, after all, there's no rules. We don't have to do it. No, we don't have to do it. There's only 12 steps. You don't have to take any of them. That's the reason we have so many first step Johns and Jills in the AA, you know. Sober and how they hate it. But the funny thing is, one does have to die, don't we? And then you take it from there. Then another excuse often used is, well, I would, but I just don't feel well. They tell the story about a young lad who got a job. And after he had worked a while, he went into the boss and asked him to leave him off for the rest of the day. And he told the boss, I just don't feel well. Well, the boss said, now, young man, I want to tell you something. I want to tell you something that you can't learn too often or too well. And that is, that most of the work done in this old workaday world is done by people who just don't feel well. But it is a good excuse. It does salve our conscience. Then another excuse is, well, at least I'm not a hypocrite. Oh, yeah, I drink once in a while, but I admit I drink. I'm not a hypocrite. How many times do we hear that? Sure, I go to church once in a great while, but I don't go all the time. I'm not a hypocrite about it. I admit it. You know, a lot of people, they won't come to AA at all. In the same way, there's a lot of people who won't go to church. You know what I tell those people who say that they don't go because they're not a hypocrite? I tell them they might as well come, because there's always room for one more. Then another excuse we hear in AA very often, and they lift that out of the big AA book, and that is, well, after all, I'm not a saint. That's right, we ain't. But you know what the Lord's going to say to that excuse on Judgment Day? He's going to just give you one little word. He's going to say, why? With all the helps I've given, with all the opportunities, with all the group help and everything else, why? Then another excuse in the modern era, which is very common, is, well, after all, you gotta let go once in a while. And my doctor said so. Well, in AA, we say let go too, but we add something to it. We say let go and let God say how far to let go. Yes, anything within the law of nature or God is reasonable, and we should relax and let go. But to let go for anything, that's a wonderful excuse. Then another one is, well, I know a certain person, and he's a wonderful guy, and he doesn't. You know, it's amazing how many wonderful people there all of a sudden rises in the world. When we want to quote one to excuse ourselves. Well, I know a guy in AA, and he's a wonderful AA. And he does this. He don't do that. Wonderful people. Those are the kind we see in the sanitarium later on. They're not so wonderful then. Then another excuse you hear used in business quite often. And that is, well, if I don't, he will. So that justifies any action at all. I don't know what kind of excuses the guys on television use, but I think if you would have read the testimony last few weeks, you would have found some wonderful excuses, you know. One guy did it to help education. Well, that salved his conscience. Trying to find a reason where there ain't any. Then this next excuse, maybe I'd better let go. Maybe I'd better pass it over. I know the women would think much more of me if I did, but maybe I better hadn't, because then they'd say I would use an excuse. And that is, well, after all, it's a woman's privilege. Where did they get this privilege? Did anyone in history or scriptures or anywhere down through the ages find where this privilege was given to a certain part of the human race? But believe me, ladies, you got something there. At least a good excuse. Then another one we hear in AA once in a while is, well, after all, I'm a little wacky. Do you know why a fellow would rather be wacky than a sinner? Well, if he's wacky, he doesn't have to do anything about it. But if he's a sinner, there's a responsibility of changing. It justifies our action, it salves our conscience, it lets us escape from responsibility. Then another one we hear in AA quite often is, well, after all, yeah, but I'm different. That's all right for everybody else, but I'm different. And of course, if I'm different, well, then I can do anything I want to do. Because I'm different. Then another one is, well, after all, I would, but times change, you know, and you've got to be modern. You've got to keep up with the time. Well, I'm going to tell you something. Times indeed do change. They change a lot. But souls change very little, and God not at all. Unquote. Then another one which excuses us from the law of charity is, well, after all, I'm a very frank person. I speak my mind. No matter who it hurts, I speak my mind. Of course, the scriptures say he who thinks himself to be religious, not bridling his tongue, that man's religion is vain. And vain means worthless in the English language. Then another excuse is, well, after all, you see, I'm the nervous type. Oh, what an excuse that is. It's my nerves, you know. Me get mad? Well, I'm just nervous. Me lazy, I'm just resting my nerves. Me jealous, well, she just makes me nervous. Who's getting old? Then another excuse, which is very prominent in AA circles, and that is, AA comes first. And that we can use to excuse us from anything. That one gives us so many AA widows throughout the country, you know. I can get out of the house and go to a meeting because after all, AA comes first. I can get around any obligation of life by saying, well, AA comes first. AA comes first inside, not AA activity. The law of succession of value in life is God first, then myself, then my family, then my friends, and even my enemies comes along next. Then another one, which is very apropos, especially to AA, and that is, no dues, no fees. No money in AA, why should I give anything? And that's what's made New York almost a poorhouse. The same people who thought nothing of going into a tavern and saying, shut the house! Putting down a $20 bill. Now the poor secretary, the chairman, or the member of the group who has to do with the money asked for a little donation to help with the expenses, and they yell to high heaven. And when they take that 2 bits out of their pocket, you can hear their elbows squeak. You know, speaking of this idea of helping out in the groups and no dues, no fees, in order to bring those together and explain how they can coexist mutually, they tell the story of a preacher who was preaching about salvation. And he was saying, salvation doesn't cost a thing. It's absolutely free. It is just like the water the Lord gives us. It doesn't cost a thing. Then after he got through preaching, they passed the collection basket. One of the members of the congregation went up to the preacher and he said, say, preacher, how come you say salvation's free and now you pass the collection basket? Well, so he said, I mean what I said, salvation is free. I said it's just like the water that the Lord gives us. But you know something? When it comes to the piping, you've got to pay for it. Then an excuse, which is an excuse to excuse all excuses, and is used all over the world in AA, and that is, well, after all, I'm an alcoholic. What do you expect? I'm an alcoholic. We get mad, but what do you expect? I'm an alcoholic. We are lazy. Well, what do you expect? I'm an alcoholic. We're dishonest. We lie. Well, what do you expect? I'm an alcoholic. We chisel and we cheat. We nurse our fault. Well, what do you expect? I'm an alcoholic. And on and on. What do you expect? I'm an alcoholic. Then we see that same guy drinking. Well, what do you expect? He's an alcoholic. When we came to AA and were confronted with the 12 steps, we were faced with a big order to handle. But we begin to realize as we analyze those 12 steps that there was a definite reason for all of these steps, and that reason was to substitute in our lives for the habit of excuse with the habit of seeking truth. Now let's take the 12 steps and see how even in the 12 steps, some members here and there still try to excuse themselves. Because they are, that is the steps, are aimed at finding truth to replace the habit of excuse making. The first step, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. And how many excuses we hear to get around that step? Well, after all, yeah, I'm not that bad. Oh, I'm not powerless. Oh, maybe I drink too much, but I can run my life. I have not lost my family. I haven't lost my job. I'm just about to, but I haven't. I had a long distance call some years ago from a fellow who hadn't been working for a year because of drinking. The fellow with whom he was staying had called me initially, and then he put the other fellow on the line. And I asked him, I said, by the way, have you ever heard of Alcoholics Anonymous? Oh, he said, I'm not that bad. I said, well, why aren't you working then? He couldn't answer that. Then the second step, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And here, the primary excuse used, oh, there's lots of excuses used for all these steps, you know. But the one used mostly here is, well, after all, you've got to be practical. And I don't go for this God stuff. That's the nice way around it. That will stab my conscience. That will get me out of adjusting again to life's obligations. Because you've got to be practical. The funny thing is, the more spiritual we become, the more practical we become. But I beg you, hold me excused. Then the third step. We made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. And here the excuse most often used is one little word, mañana. I'm going to take the third step, mañana, tomorrow. I'm going to turn part of it over, yeah. But I'll turn it all over to God tomorrow. Then the fourth step, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And the excuse used to get around this step is taken from the Scripture. You know, that makes it seem valid. And it is, well, why should I take that step? The Scripture says, let the past be gone. Let the dead bury the dead. And after all, anyhow, it disturbs my peace of mind. So I don't take the inventory. And I have no peace of mind. And I have no serenity. And it won't be too long. Maybe I don't have any sobriety either. Then the fifth step, we admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrong. And here we use one of the axioms of AA to get around it. How often you hear a fellow say, well, but we're told in AA, easy does it. Why should I go to all that bother? Take it easy. There's plenty of time. Keep putting it off, chum. That's the easiest way out of it. Easy does it. How we twist them to excuse ourselves. Then the sixth step, we were entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. And here again, we have pride turned backward. We have big shotitis in reverse. We hear a lot of fellows and gals say, well now, on this sixth step, why should I be ready to have God remove my shortcomings? I'm too bad. You don't know what I've done. And of course, that excuses us from doing anything about it. That's like the guy who's still drinking and says, look, I'm not kidding anybody, I'm hopeless. That's a wonderful excuse. If I'm hopeless, why should I try even? Then the seventh step, humbly ask Him to remove our shortcomings. And right away, somebody will pop up and say, well, why should I ask God to remove these shortcomings? He knows all about me. That justifies my laziness in prayer and meditation, going to God, depending on God. I beg you, hold me excused. Then the eighth step. We made a list of all the people we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And here we also have one little word, and that is but. Well, I would do this, but. After all, they did me wrong too. And after all, it wasn't all my fault. And after all, sometimes I couldn't help it. So I would do it, but. Oh yeah, I would make up that dishonesty I did to that fella, but. You know what a preacher one time said about but? He said, every time I ask the congregation to do something, they all tell me they would love to, but. And he says, I'm here to tell you that if you don't watch out, you're all going to hell on your butts one of these days. But as with all excuses, it salves our conscience, it justifies our actions, at least to our own way of thinking, and it enables us to escape responsibility. Then the ninth step, we made direct amends wherever possible, except where to do so would injure them or others. And here, the excuse most often used is, well, that's not really necessary. In the matter of justice and rights, it is not necessary. So it excuses it. The tenth step, we continue to take personal inventory, and when wrong, promptly admitted it. And here, so many will say, well, I would do that, but it disturbs my peace of mind, you know. Why should I continually dig something up? You know, if something about me disturbs my peace of mind, I better do something about that something about me, or else someday it might disturb more than my peace of mind. The 11th step, we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry it out. And here, with this step about prayer and meditation, we hear so many say, well, I'm no pious puss. I'm no Bible thumper. That's all right for that type of guy, but I'm a real man, a real woman. Till I drink again. Then the 12th step, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all of our affairs. And here there are thousands of excuses. Oh, I would speak, I would do 12-step work, but I'm not talented along those lines. I'm no public speaker. Oh, there's thousands of excuses, but they all justify me in my own mind, stab my conscience. Shades of the parable. You know, I bought a farm and I must go see it. I bought 5 yoke of oxen, I must go try them. I married a wife, and I can't go. Now, as we saw in the beginning, with desolation is the land made desolate, because there are none who thinketh in their heart. And that's the reason these 12 steps aim at the replacing of the habit of excuses with the habit of seeking truth. The 12 steps are divided into three sections. Number one, that's the door. Lots of guys and lots of gals, they open it and then they run. But they'll be back. They'll be back someday. Number 2 to 9, that's getting on the program. Getting ready for the program. 10, 11, and 12, that's the daily working day in and day out of the program in order to replace the habit of excuse with the habit of truth. Prayer and meditation. Right in the middle, the core of the whole thing, meditation, seeking truth in the presence of God. Step number 9, I seek the truth about me, inventory. 11, I seek the truth about God and me, prayer and meditation. 12, I seek the truth about my neighbor and me. Carry the message to other alcoholics. And right in the middle is meditation. And so I'm going to close with one statement. The more we meditate, the more truth we'll find. The more truth we'll find, the easier will we accept things. And the more we accept, the less conflict we will have. And the less conflict we have, the more peace of mind, the more serenity. And so therefore, if we meditate every day, the day will never come when we have to meditate. Remember the last bin? May God bless you for this.